Okay. Why don't we get started? Thank everyone for coming, of course, and thank the Strums for hosting. Next week's final installment will be at the home of the Laymans. I believe last year you had a Hanukkah one also at your house, right? We're going to have a reprisal. I remember being very distracted as I spoke because I could smell the latkes you were making. I'm not sure if I'm going to come, so you need to tell me if there's going to be latkes. Just to spend a moment reviewing... Notice some fresh faces, but to review what we did last week in just a minute. It took us an hour and 15 minutes last week, but essentially what we saw last week was the basic debate on what the issues were, aside from reviewing the whole history with the League of Nations and the Balfour Declaration and the Peel paper and other things such as that, modern Zionism. But we discussed the basic debate through the sources that exist about why were those were very opposed to the Zionist national movement and ultimately the establishment of the State of Israel. And we essentially focused on two components, two. One was the major crux of our Shir lecture last week, which was the topic, the famous Gemara, which says that there are three odes, and then the Sasa Subis, one of which is that the Jewish people will not, in a large group, come back to Eretz Israel, and Sotna Rebbe, among others, used that as his opposition to Zionist movement, so that the whole State of Israel was illegitimate. We saw that there were even some perhaps who agreed with him, although they didn't go as far as him. And we also essentially saw four or five different answers why that position was presumed wrong by a majority of the Gdol Yisrael at the time, whether it's because the whole Gemara was only agadic, it's not supposed to be legal or halachic, whether it's because that only referred to a case in which the Jewish people were rebelling against the nations of the world, who themselves were forsworn not to persecute us too much, but since they obviously violated their end of the Shavua, therefore we were allowed to go back, or perhaps one of the more well-known ones, which a number of people held, including the Or Sameach, the famous Rabbi Simcha Vinsk, in a famous letter, which quoted the confirmation at the League of Nations in San Remo, where they endorsed the partition plan, in which he said that the whole purpose of that Shavua is we can't rebel against the nations of the world, but if they're giving us the land, then we're not rebelling. They're giving it to us. So we saw the debate back and forth. And then we noted two other issues which were mentioned by different sources. One was the position that how could you have a return to Eretz Israel, a piece of Geula, when it's coming at the hands of the non-Jews? Because the British or the UN, that's how Geula is supposed to come. Geula is supposed to come with the Jewish king or a Mashiach or something like that. So we saw that discussion debated. And we saw, in fact, that Chacham Adif Minavi, it appeared that the Ramban and the Radak, prophesied might be the wrong word, but they essentially wrote many, many hundreds of years ago, that the third restoration will actually be specifically, dafka, through the hands of the Goyim, through the hands of the non-Jewish governments. So, on the contrary, not only is that not a problem, it may be, for whatever mysterious reason, dafka, the way things are supposed to occur. And the last issue, which was a very sensitive one, which I still believe to this very day, we'll see it a little bit tonight, is the single biggest issue, frankly, is the issue of not the non-Jews, but, you know, civil wars are always most passionate. It's the internal Jewish issue. And that is, and I say sometimes that we forget, but really if you just read the news in Israel, after a certain while you'll be reminded of just how passionate the issues are within the Jewish people, namely just how far, unfortunately, just how far from Torah the general Zionist movement was, how typically anti-religious it was in its formation. There's no question about it. An accurate assessment of the nationalist yearnings was that that was going to replace Torah as the central destination of the Jewish people. We spent some time last week with some quotes, how the Jewish people should give up waiting for Mashiach, it's not going to come, we've had a Golus, now we need to take our future into our own hands. Obviously, hostage tradition, don't wait for Mashiach, there was a quote, Herzl is the new Mashiach. The whole perspective was one which was very antagonistic. And the idea of the notion of Al Tischaber LaRusha, we can't be involved with something which at its core is the anti-religious, that was something that animated many. We saw the I said I could have given you many, many letters. I gave you one of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's letters in which he writes that that's why he's so opposed. Even the joining with the Rabbanut HaRashit, since they are supporters of the JNF, Keren Kayemet. Keren Kayemet, he said, is trying to make Afikarsim Lahachis, And that's the issue. It's all a religious issue. Does everyone have floor sheets? I have a few extra here. Everyone has some back there? Okay, if more people come, you let me know. I still have a few up here. So that was a big issue. And we saw, again, the notion that even though, of course, the religious people were very sensitive to that, and there's no one who's religious who should be happy or content with that reality, nevertheless, whether that should be an objection is itself debatable. And in fact, we saw an essay by Aaron Soloveitchik in which he pointed out, with two different episodes from Navi, from Malachim Beis, where you see that it's not at all, even though it may be surprising, but it's not unprecedented, whether it be a Yeshua or some kind of even expansion of the borders of Eretz Yisrael occurring specifically through people who are very far from Torah. As Rav Aaron, in his inimitable manner, said, the Navi describes Yoav ben Yoash, who it describes as Russia, and essentially, as Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, he was no greater Russia than Ben-Gurion. And if it could happen through him, it could certainly happen through Ben-Gurion. So these were some of the issues in a more general sense that we discussed last week. The way I would like to divide up tonight's lecture, and then I hope concluding with next week, is to be a little bit more focused on the nuances. I think I intentionally focused, and I think we typically focus, on the two extremes. Either yes or no. And the truth is that there really is a lot of nuance in the middle. There's a lot of nuance in the camp that I'll call the non-Zionist, whether they should be non or anti or rapidly and radically anti. Those are three different categories. And I think we'll hopefully see next week as well, even within the category of great Gedolim who have been comfortable being identified with or referring to themselves even as part of the religious Zionist or Mizrahi world, it's not one monolithic approach. There's some very different approaches to that. And I would like to essentially focus tonight on what I'll call shades of black. And then next week we'll focus on shades of white. Maybe combined we'll create shalom for all of Israel, we'll solve the world's problems, and then we'll all call it shades of gray. But that's essentially the game plan in light of our background from last week. Now, it was already pointed out to me, although I'm not sure this is true, that perhaps this week's source booklet is bigger than last week's. I promised you last week we finished an hour and 15 minutes, and I know for a fact we did for the minute because the digital recording tells you how long it was. It was exactly an hour and 15 minutes. So I hope to try to do that as well tonight, but for that we need to begin. So let's start, and again, I tried to arrange, in the middle of this, there could have been a different order perhaps. There are certain other Gedolim who are not going to study. I didn't mention everyone. There's a limit even to what I can produce on one sheet, or we could do in one night. But I did try to have some type of order, and essentially I hope to start to be Kaseh, in the most extreme, and even within, the, as I say, still the very much the non-Zionist camp, and because that, another extreme, something a little bit more moderate towards the end. But there's no question, if you want to start with the most extreme, you have really one of two choices. One was the Munkacher Rebbe, not as well known, but the Munkacher Rebbe wrote many letters which are published in the Sefer, which it's as if if he wanted to, he could compete with his compatriot from Hungarian Orthodoxy, and that's the more well-known exponent, and that is the Satmar Rebbe. We discussed a little bit of the Satmar Rebbe last week. Just to mention again, just to give you a frame of reference, the Satmar Rebbe, if you're title-bound, died in 1979. He was a survivor of the camps, went through some very terrible things there. As you all know, rebuilt his Hasidus with tremendous vibrancy in New York after the war. And even though he has other books and other writings and certainly other quotes about the State of Israel, his most well-known work was his first one. It was published in 1959, so that's a little more than 10 years after the State of Israel. And it was the whole book is called Vayoel Moshe, his name being Yoel, play on his name. And it essentially comprises three essays. And all three are related, but the one we've been focusing on, and we'll continue to focus on, is the opening essay of that book called Ma'amar Shalosh Tzvuos, the essay of the three oaths, and that takes its title from this topic we focused on last week, which is this famous piece of Gemara, which says that there are three oaths, which he certainly saw as the basic prohibition and the source of his antagonism for Zionism and the State of Israel. So just to give you, if you didn't yet have one last week, more of a flavor of just, before you can know what the middle is, you have to know what the extremes are. And again, I'm glad you're all sitting if you haven't read this before. Some of you, I admit, may find some of it, especially the first part of it, uncomfortable. I wouldn't say that's the point, but I'm not upset about that. In other words, we should be exposed. I don't know if there's any art Hasidim of Satmar in the room, which is okay. But I think, as I said to you last night, the book is brilliant. He was brilliant. He was a great, great Gadol. You see, even those who disagreed with him vehemently had tremendous respect for him. And it's certainly, if we're going to be sophisticated, intellectually honest people, we need to be exposed even to sources which we may anticipate not agreeing with. So if you look at the right side of the first source sheet, you have the beginning. Let's start with the beginning. I didn't give this to you last week. I was saving it for tonight. This is the opening, his introduction to the book. Hakdama. And he says the following, very simple. He says, Hayos, ki bavonasin harabim, b'shan ha'achronos, savalnu tsaros rabos. In the last few years, we have suffered great tragedies, obviously alluding to the Holocaust. Tremendous, tremendous tragedies for the Jewish people. Asher lo haisa chazos Yisrael me'az. In our entire nationhood, we've never suffered the way we did in the Holocaust. So he says, I'm paraphrasing now, he says, listen, we need to think about why did that happen. He says, the historical pattern, religiously, Jews are obligated to analyze why did terrible tragedy happen to us. That has been going on since the time of the prophets, since the Nevi'im. We analyze why did bad things happen, and the Nevi'im, our leaders, tried to figure out what those were so that we could do tshuva. So if that's the case, we need to figure out what did we do in this generation to merit such terrible punishment. After all, he says in the second paragraph, Vavenu nishvar b'kirvenu, shivrei shvarim, v'ein lana b'mal hisnachim l'hasadeh. We're broken, we're destroyed, we're downtrodden. But in order to pick ourselves up, we need to know how did we get ourselves into this mess. In the bottom of that right-hand column, you see that he says, listen, in previous generations, Gedolim tried to figure out what was the problem. And sometimes it wasn't always easy to figure out what the problem was, but if we do that, then we can be mitakein uloshuv el Hashem Yisbarach. Then we can fix the problem and do tshuva, as we've seen in the Kra, in the Tanakh, and in the Talmud. He quotes other historical periods where this happened, even after the Tanakh. You should think this is just a biblical phenomenon. Whenever there was great tragedy, the leaders of that generation decided what was the problem. So he looked at the left-hand side, the left-hand column, so now he goes to task. V'asha, now, v'doreinu zeh, in our generation, ein tzrichim l'chapes l'vakesh, v'batmunim, es ha'ein, ha'avon, excuse me, I can barely read the zeros, I'm sorry. I have to pick it up, maybe my eyesight's worse. Es ha'avon, shehevi aleinu es ha'tzara hazos. He says, in the other generations, he had to dig to find what was the problem. Because in our generation, it's very easy to know what was the Aveira that caused the Holocaust, that caused these terrible tragedies. You go in with Furish. It's obvious. Shekidu l'nuzos, beferish, shlomdo mikraish, aidei ha'avera, ha'avara al-ashvuos, shalalos b'choma. It's obvious. We rebelled by going against these three oaths. We returned to Eretz Yisrael. We're not supposed to forcibly try to end the Golus, and we did it. Yitzchus ha'keis. We did terrible things. That's what happened. Hamimim ba'apikorsim. Also, kol meni hishtadlus la'avar al hashvuos. All these terrible people, we didn't just sit back and wait for the Golus to end. We were active. We tried to return to Eretz Yisrael. It's a terrible thing. La'alos b'choma. Likach me'atma memshalo v'cheres kodem azman. They tried to retake sovereignty and freedom in the land of Israel before we should have. Shetav tchisa sakeit. That's one of the violations of the shvuos. Not yet. We did terrible, terrible things. La rayon hatame hazel. It was an impure philosophy. And it wasn't just that we thought about it, he says in the concluding third paragraph. Lohaya machshava b'lhad. It wasn't just our thoughts. Abol nasu maitim rabin ba'atsumim lefula hamara hazos. We did many things in order to achieve this horrible thing. V'tachbulos ofanim shonim lohavi li dekach. We did everything we could successfully to violate these three oaths. Anything we did that was a violation of the shvuos, and essentially he says, without naming the beast, but his thrust is clear, the cause of the Holocaust was the Zionist movement. Obviously, the founding of the state postdates the Holocaust. Well, we have seen and we'll continue to see more about that relationship, but the cause, he says, listen, let's see, yes, Rabbi Monk.
Please just make a moment there. But in according to it, what's amazing is that the Yadut, Europa, which did not come to Eretz Yisrael, which were not aware of the Avera from Lalot Alachoma, were destroyed, and all in Eretz Yisrael, not one,
okay,
did they suffer. I was Eretz Yisrael.
Yes. I can't hear you. Quote, we spoke about that last week. I don't want to review last week's shiur now. We spoke about that last week. That's what money. We said one of the answers against the Tabarev was the whole Gemara Zagadatha. He did? Okay. Now, as I alluded to last week, I wanted you to have a chance to see inside. Given where the Satan Rebbe is coming from, you know, we often in our own in our backyard, we often throw around terms, right, left, you know, but we have to realize something, and I often, in both directions, find people making this mistake. Before you can evaluate something, you have to have a context. What could be right-wing in one place is very left in another, and vice versa. So, Satan Rebbe will be right-wing wherever he goes, don't worry. But my point is just to give you a sense. So I mentioned to you last week, I'll give you a chance to see, out, see it inside. The main thrust of his passion, to use a nice way of putting it, is not the secular people. It's not even what we'll call Mizrahi or Zionists. The main target he has in his sights is the Aguda. Is the Aguda compromised? The Aguda got involved in the government. The Aguda is still very involved in the government. And for him, that was the single biggest problem. How could the people who are identified as Haredim, to use a term we're familiar with, how could they be the ones who are being in such violation? They are giving the fuel to the fire. If it was only the Zionists, I knew a bunch of Rishayim doing more vicious type of things. But to have other great people doing it, that is what bothered him so much. If you look at the second source of the half from here, Benito Didani says, in our case, right side, the Elu Shehochin Le'oso HaKnesses, Adaz Ke'elio Sham Chaverim, Chaver Knesset, you knew the term, right? You have people going involved, be part of the government, they're getting involved in the laws that they're making. It's Kfir B'Tzar HaKdosha. From beginning to end, the whole thing is Kfira. And what do they do worse? Makapla Mayhem Kovid, right? They get honored by the government. Umaman Gedola, they get lots of money from the government. I'm sorry, thank you. And they get the great kavod, great honor. Shabli Safek, Nivshachim, Vinigrarin, Basrayu. All of this is causing these terrible problems. Hayala al Hadas, Lahatir Kazos, Afilu Bamakum Sakana. You'll tell me we have to be involved in the government because we're also Sakana. We need Israel, it'll save us. So not everything's permitted just to save your life. Okay. Not everything's permissible. It's a horrible thing. It's complete fear to be part of that. You should give up your life rather than be part of the Israeli government. How could anyone be part of that? How could anyone permit that? And we see, right at the end of this paragraph, we see with our own eyes how terribly contaminated these otherwise from people have become by becoming part of the government. How terrible is this? And then he says on the left side, he makes it explicitly, I have it underlined, Aval Or Chomer Yoser, Sha'ayidei, that through their joining Imam Basir Esa Maisa Tzionis Bifnei Kol HaOlam, they're publicizing and they're machshirin, they're legitimizing this Zionism in front of the whole world. The whole world now thinks that this is okay because from people have gotten involved. So he points out, I'll skip it for the sake of time, but if you want to be curious on the third installment here, he writes all about, he gives you a little bit of a history. How he says that at the time, again, I'm not here to do a history of the Aguda or to know whether his facts are correct. But he says here, Rov Gidol Yisrael mitnagdim the Aguda. He says when the Aguda was founded, they were mostly against it. Which Rosh Hashivas, which Admorim, which Chassidish Rebbes were very involved in the Aguda? They're the ones who thought it's an age-old debate in any similar situation. Should we stay apart? Or if we get involved, we can have an influence. He says they thought, well, we can control and temper the influence of the Zionists and the Mizrahi if we're involved actively. That was what they thought. But he says, you see, that it was all a mistake. It was all wrong. Because they were so upset at them, they thought they could do it. But then he says on the left side, the whole thing has been a mistake. They thought that they're going to go to war against the Tzionim. But the Eish Sheratzu HaTzionim, L'Kablam, L'Iten Lehem Chelet, Mem Shalosam, once the Zionists held out the carrot, come be part of our government, then they compromised. So he has questions their integrity. It's terrible. It's their fault. They're giving the stamp of approval to this horrible institution called the Knesset, the State of Israel. It's a horrible thing. And therefore, he directs most of his ire against the Aguda. He says, no, Zionists, Mizrahi, no one cares about them. He writes at one point, I don't think I put it on the sheet, but just to give you an astounding statistic, because it's all perspective, he thinks that at most 1% of Jews are frozen. I think that would probably exclude most of the people in this room, if you want to get to 1%. But that's the perspective that he's articulating. And therefore, it's all true. That's his credit. So that's my knowledge to this very day. They talk the talk. They also walk the walk. They don't take a penny. They're not involved, and I'm sure it hurts them. They don't take a penny to suffer. They don't take the suffer. The more mainstream absolutely do. But that's exactly what he finds fault with them. And that's why they are so antagonistic. And again, I think it would be fair to say, without getting into the nuances per se, this defines, but for lack of a better term, we will call the right wing, the most extreme anti-approach. Again, it's a whole book. I just gave you snippets.
This doesn't explain the Holocaust.
The Zionist movement began in the 19th century.
That's the second part.
No, but the beginning, he says this went by them, the whole Zionist conference in Switzerland, all that stuff. He says that was active efforts to try to rebel against the Shavuos. Just to give you a sense, you know, you can imagine, as far removed as he is from us, the Satmar Rebbe, he's far more far removed from your typical Jewish academic. And yet, because of the extremism of the approach, but also because of the scintillating brilliance of the man, he's been a very intriguing personality. And the work of there's a decent amount of scholarship, more than you might have otherwise expected, in academic circles about the Satmar Rebbe, about the Turei Karta, about the movement. So one recent article, I actually know this author pretty well, he's only a few years older than me. He's a professor now at Touro College. He's a PhD from Columbia. His name is C. Kaplan, originally from Montreal, a Frum Fellow. So he recently wrote an article in a journal called Modern Judaism, in which he sums up, again, this basic final point, that despite the gravity of its sin, the Zionist movement, at least, was not identifiably a religious one. Predominantly secular, the Zionists had not betrayed their own principles. The same could not be said for their Orthodox collaborators, whom Rabbi Teitelbaum held accountable for the legitimization of the Zionist heritage. And participate in the government, the Orthodox, the Good of Israel organization, which had originally opposed Zionism, has sold out to the Zionists. By collaborating with the Zionists, they legitimized Zionism for the entire world, and the entire world is accepting this impurity, this belief that the Pharisees have permitted. He talks about the era of Rav. Again, there's no end to the things you could quote, and they're all very interesting, but I would say, Icon, we'll move out of Hungary right now. Yes? We're going to get to the fact. On the third page is the Chazanish. But again, I just want. But the bottom line is, anything you'll say, I'm going to be something or other. It doesn't matter. It doesn't impress it. He doesn't care. You can listen to Harvey Gadol. They're all wrong. The bigger the gadol, the more the problem. On the contrary, you'll tell me Chazanish was in the Aguda. Oh, that's horrible. That doesn't. It can never end. This is just quicksand. Doesn't matter what you try, it'll just sink in. It's not going to work. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, I don't know. One thing I will say, I would say in his defense, first of all, I'm not sure he is interested in me defending him. And second of all, I don't know if I'd be up to the task anyway, but one thing I will say in his defense, it's a very dangerous proposition, not just for the Satmar Rebbe, but for any of us, no matter what our philosophy on life is, start trying to figure out who's right and wrong by who's got a better life. In other words, knowing God's ways and starva onish in this world is a very tricky proposition. Now again, you'll turn this around, you say that on against the Satmar Rebbe too. How can he say that the Holocaust happened? Oh, that they were wrong. I think that I think is a fair finding. But to try to figure out who got saved and say that that somehow contradicts him, I hear it on one level. But on another level, the truth is, we have to be honest. You know, it's like that's a road that eventually you'll get caught on too. The bad things happen to good people, to put it mildly. So, okay? I'm not saying I really have an answer for you. I'm just telling you that. But as I told you, it gets even more radical. He has another book, which he published after the Six Day War, I think, called Al Hagula of Al Hatzmura. Because you can imagine, as you all know, the fervor in the pro, in the general world, and even in the religious, in the pro Zionist world, reached an apex after 67, which it hadn't even come close to 1948. But the more the pressure was being ratcheted up in 67 about the Nisim and the flow then, then you have people like Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz and others speaking about unbelievable Nisim, so then the Satmar Rebbe is being backed more and more into a corner. So what happens when you back somebody as powerful as the Satmar Rebbe in a corner? You think he cowered? He came back out fighting more. So that book is more radical. You know, when you have this, you know, we know people like this in life, and again, Halabai, we should, Al-Habdil, he was a great, great gone and a great tzaddik.
Who cares?
I do.
Hi.
Because I think that was the premise of the speech, that was the opening sentence. Because I think it's important for us to know, in general, as intellectually open-minded people.
It's nice to know.
Okay. Yes.
There's another difficulty. That's the side of Zionism aspect, and that is ancient.
according to his thesis, according to his premise, anytime you, that the Frum community works within a government, they are bound to, you know, defile themselves. You know,
yes.
And that's true here in America. That would be true.
Yes, I was going to say, the bottom line is, his comment about the religious parties, I didn't assume any too many people objecting to that. You know, it's not clear to me that any of the religious parties have had so many moments of great Kiddush Hashem. You know, that you know, as I say, there are pearls here. You have to just know how to move around.
If you think that everybody should know both sides, then why don't you have somebody tomorrow morning that says they should move the Lanakusium?
Say again, move what?
You know, tomorrow morning you're having a seminar, right? And it's a right-wing seminar. It's a right-wing thing. Nobody's going to go in there and say, this was right to move
the Lanakusium. Well, they're not discussing.
But you know what I mean?
All right, first of all, it's a completely separate topic. It's a completely different topic. Second of all, you can't start using the word right when you're talking about Gush Katif. We're talking about completely mixing metaphors. And third of all, that's a cold term museum program, not mine. Okay, turn to the next page. So Repenkin. I want you to know who Repenkin is before we see the next page. Rav Henkin was a great, great Litvish Gadol who moved from the Hasidic to the non-Hasidic world. Rav Henkin died in 1973, not that long ago. Rav Henkin lived on the Lower East Side, was considered the Posei Kador, really before Rav Moshe Feinstein. Just to give you two quotes, before we see what he says, two quotes, you should know where Rav Henkin was. Rav Soloveitchik said about Rav Henkin that when he met him, he could imagine what Adam Harishon was before the Chet. That was a quote. I'll give you a second quote. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said when Rav Henkin died, he said, I can't believe it. I always thought he would be the one who would welcome Mashiach. So this is the great tzaddik and genius. Rav Henkin was a teenager. Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer gave him a faher on Erevin, and then he realized that he, the teenager, Rav Henkin, knew it better than Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, who was the leading Rosh Yeshiva in Europe. This is a super duper 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 tzaddik and a genius. And there were people, including Aryeh Gutenberg, who knew him on the Lower East Side. He died in 1973. Aryeh was in his 20s then. Aryeh knew exactly who he was. And he had a tremendous reputation as a very soft-spoken, sensitive, wonderful person who got along with everyone. Keep that in mind. So he writes the following. There's a two-volume work called Kisvei Rav Henkin. That's his son. That's correct. Yes, his son is a professor at Columbia. And he writes the following. U'l'inyan memshelas medinas Yisrael, she'enem nohagim kishura. When it comes to the issue of the government of Israel, who are not behaving the way they should, Kvar Lamadnu, Eliyahu Anavi, Shros Lefnei Achav, Nemar, Besos, Lavaruach, Lavarash, Lavaish, Rabakol, Mamadaka. In other words, and he's referring, we'll see, to the Satmar Rebbe, you know, the screaming and all the vitriol and the radical stuff is not going to get us anywhere. Better to talk softly and to be a little bit more low key, we can be more effective. Hine, Hakol Yodin, Shani Aliti, Yamit Nagdim, Hare Atsumin, Yisod Medina Atsmit. He says, I was known to be against the establishment of the state of Israel. Among Ka'et, the Yevet Alai Lomar, Shemem Shalos Israel, the Ha'idna, he Democratis. He says, now I have to admit, but it exists, and in fact, doesn't exist as democratic. In it, Rabu, Chaverim, Shomei Torah, Nahag Bidara Gashorah. The more we're involved, so the more it will take on the character of a Torah state. Gam ki eit, kosh echtav lahalon, harbe mi yisodat ha-Torah, nishmarim bo. Ha-devarim yosar buvarim, ha-mayimar bufoy. There's only so much I can say in these letters, but, you know what, it's not all bad there, it's not all bad. So he writes the following, Uvin Ogeel is my name, the issues of our day. Ko ha-am mikotza, shrichim mit azer b'koach, azor ha-nitzachot. All Jews have to do everything they can to make sure of the success of the state of Israel. However, Ulumadze, Hamemshala, Sricha, B'chol Kocha, L'Azra, L'Yishav HaTarani. The government should help the Torah community. Shu Yisod, Shalom Hamemshala, because we are really the foundation. Shabuskuso, Kasuda, Ubuskuso, Mitkayam. In the schools of Torah, the state was established and will continue. Shiru Aruba, L'Shalom. It's, so to speak, like the guarantor for peace. And I have to tell you, I'm not going to read with you the next five or six lines, but not because I'm hiding it for you. If I was hiding it for you, I wouldn't put it on the sheet. But I spent over half an hour, including with the Chavrusa over the phone, trying to make heads or tails of the next five sentences. I just can't figure out how they cohere. He seems to be talking about how the government should not have conquests, kibushim, but then he speaks. It's a little bit confusing. I don't know what to tell you. It's a little bit confusing the next few lines. But then he circles back and he speaks about how he's heard rumors in America which I think we now know are unfortunately confirmed, of some terrible episodes with the Moroccan and specifically the Tamani Jews who made Aliyah to Eretz Israel. We know they're horrible stories. Government separated them from their families, shaved off their payas, indoctrinated them to be anti-religious with their little kids. There were some very, very terrible things that were happening. Unfortunately, it still happened with some of the extreme elements that were anti-religious in the state. They were afraid that if all this religious community from Tehran would come to Israel, that would affect the character of the state. And the secular elite did not want that. So there were some very horrible stories which he writes about. He says, you know, we need to figure these things out. We need to make sure that things are being done well. However, he says, we have to realize that, again, he repeats the theme a few different times. I just want to share with you basically 2 points that he basically makes which are the most important. Let me find where exactly that is. If you look at the left-hand side where I have Amud Reish Dalit, this is one of his basic points. He makes it a few different times. Because listen, before the Medina was established, one thing. It's already existed. The whole world has agreed. The United Nations voted to establish the state of Israel. We have to do everything we can to help the Medina. Again, I think he's getting back to the theme that we shouldn't be so militaristic to the state of Israel. We should be looking to do more. We should be happy with what we have. Bottom line is, again, he repeats numerous times that I was against the state of Israel when it was founded, but now that it's already founded, things are different. Now, one thing, he hints that he thinks maybe it was against the Shavuos, but he doesn't say explicitly. He does not say explicitly. But you'll see two more incredible things. If you look at I just want to do the last three paragraphs I have here. On the left-hand side, Amud Reish Tetzvah. He's essentially been hinting at, you should realize already, he's already been hinting at taking a position, which starts off very extreme, because he says he was against the state of Israel. It's establishment, which we saw last week, all the reasons why one would have disagreed with him. But so he's in that opinion, which is already a little bit more extreme. Nevertheless, he is taking a very stark departure from who? The Satmar Rebbe, who held it was Yehar Gval Yavor to be part of the government. So he still hasn't, so to speak, explicitly referred to him, and he never mentions him by name. But in the last three paragraphs here, he specifically makes reference to the Satmar Rebbe disagreeing with him. And he writes how he read in this journal of his magazine called Komotenu. Teshva, Mar Teshva, and Tavshin Yud Tes, right? That's what is it? That's 11 years after, 59, right? It's 11 years after the State of Israel. This horrible thing he read in the name of the Satmar Rebbe, Shetzarach Limsor Nefesh Lo Lazar Lomdias Israel. We have to give up our life rather than be part of and help the State of Israel. He heard that somebody said such a thing. Second paragraph. He knows incredibly strong words that the Satmar Rebbe is saying something which is 100% anti-halacha. To have a position that would put in danger the life of millions of Jews? A terrible thing. Even though he says again, sounds like he's saying, even if the Dina was wrong, that it was against the Shavuos, nevertheless, we need to help them, but mysterious numbers, with everything we can. And now look at what he says here in the final two paragraphs on the bottom. V'chol ha-rabbanim, shayu neged ha-tzionis, yisod ha-malucha, ha-yizeh kodem ha-kamasa. Everything that was, all the rabbanim were against it, that was before it was established. Aber achar shekvar kama, after it's already been established, we need to do everything we can to make sure it helps, so it wouldn't be in sakana. And anyone who argues against that, third line, Harihu Moser Gomor Verodeth Klal Yisrael. If I'm not mistaken, he just called the Satmar Rebbe Verodeth. I mentioned to you on the flyer, right, it's in the bulletin, this is often an emotional discussion. Someone who's pursuing a Rodeth is one of the strongest criticisms, so to speak, you can make against a person. It's as if you're putting other Jews' life in danger, as if you're coming to attack them. For Kol Shekein, Kafi Hamasav Shemamish, where, you know, the state of Israel is always in a precarious position. It's not like we're so secure. And he says, this type of an Avera is a horrible one, worse than others Avera. Shadanim es kolat tzionim, v'hamizrachim, v'hagudayim, v'rabonim, l'kovrim, v'arvikarsim. What, right? The language of the Satmar Rebbe, he doesn't hold any bar. He called all the rabbonim who were involved, kovrim, and arvikarsim, heretics. Says in very simple but eloquent term, says Rav Henkin. But how could you say that? Karamu Chazal. Eizu Apikaris? Mevaza Talmud Chacham. Who's the real Apikaris? Someone who's Mevaza other Talmud Chachamim. How can we be so castigating these other Rabbanim? It's a terrible thing. But what should we do, left hand side? Tzarachli Kaneit Bifnim Bekneses. We should be part of the Knesset. We have to do whatever we can. We have to help Torah and Israel. Elections are coming up. He says we should have a religious slate. And every few years someone talks about this. Rav Henkin was talking about this also. We should have a religious slate. All the poor people should get together. True, we might have to make some compromises in the short term, but you have to look at the bigger picture. And then he writes here, I only want to read this one more thing, because it's so powerful. I never knew this until I read this just a few days ago. He says, you have to know that despite the fact that I was very against the Medina, and in fact, he writes here, where it has the parentheses, right afterwards, Ya'idu, she'eini mi'chaside ha'memshala. You shouldn't think that now that I'm saying I'm so pro, you shouldn't think that I'm the biggest chassid of the government or of the state of Israel. After all, I used to be very against the establishment state of Israel. He writes in parentheses, look at this. Ulachain afshe karov ani baruach laha aguda, eini nimne al chavireha, mechtei shalo, choshvani, sheskampi imahem ba'kama samadina. Oh, you want to know how many? We can cut the pie in many slices. There are very fine nuances here. Says Rav Henkin, I was against the state of Israel and his establishment, and therefore, you don't see Rav Henkin's name at the head of the Moshe's Goya Torah via Aguda. Why? He's a bigger gadol than all of them. Because since the Aguda was involved even beforehand with the right in the outset already, the state of Israel, so he wouldn't want anyone to think if he was involved in the Aguda officially, they officially sanctioned their politics. So he's, on the one hand, he's disavowing the Satmar Rebbe, but you shouldn't think that he's going so far to the other side. Just wants to be to the left of the Satmar Rebbe. But even the Aguda formally, he opposed. Again, before the Hakama, he says. But once there is a Hakama, then of course you have to support it. Then, again, just to show you the kind of mensch that he was, and he had a famous reputation for that. In fact, when I mentioned Arya Guttenberg, who I knew wouldn't be able to be here tonight, I spoke to him at Shal Shudas, I mentioned some of the things, he couldn't believe it. He says, you know, he had such a warm and wonderful and caring personality. Everyone knew him on the Lower East Side, someone who got along with everybody. I said, that's to his credit. It doesn't mean he didn't have strong opinions. So as he writes at the end, but it's characteristic, that even though he's obviously come out so against the Satmar Rebbe, nevertheless, Amru Chazal, Shemitzah Sokacha, Afilu Talmud L'Rav, Afilu Hedro, L'Kohen Gadol. He acknowledges he's being very critical of Satmar Rebbe, and he couches it in terms of I'm the Talmud and he's the Rebbe. Well, what can I do if I see something that I think is wrong? It's my responsibility to speak out. Okay. Let's turn the page. Let's go from America now to Eretz Yisrael. I think without a doubt, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, if not the world, the single most important an influential leader of Haredi Jewry in the mid to late 20th century was the Chazon Ish. So the truth is that I looked a little bit, maybe I could have looked harder, but I didn't find, quite honestly, I didn't find anything in writing on record from the Chazon Ish one way or another. Maybe it exists, I don't know, I didn't find it. But what I did find was an article that goes back quite a few years, 1979, it was written in the Journal of Tradition, written by a fellow, anyone here from Cleveland? They identified him as a professor from Cleveland, named C. Yehuda, who apparently, as he identifies himself, and I don't see anybody, I didn't see in the subsequent issues anyone who wrote in to say, how do you know, you don't really know the Chazon Ish, don't pretend. But he's essentially identified, the whole premise of this letter is that he was very, very close. Did you know C. Yehuda? You know who that is?
I just wanted to say, Dr. Rav Kahane, shall I put him through the head?
Yeah.
He was a Ben Bais by Chazon Ish.
Right. Okay.
And he wrote the book.
Okay, so I'll take a look.
The name of the
book. Okay. If you do, let me know.
Exactly.
Okay, so this Tzvi Yehuda said how he was very, very close to the Chazon Ish. Stop at this period in history. Now he's living in Cleveland, but what forces him to write, this article is entitled Chazon Ish on the Future State of Israel. It's essentially a free quotation of a letter this person wrote. He doesn't identify to who, but somebody wrote him a letter saying, I know you were close to the Chazon Ish. Can you tell me, was it true the following? And what is the second thing that it says here on the top left? It implies that the Chazon Ish, so to say, predicted the impending destruction of the state of Israel in the near future. You just want to know the precise date. Now, this person wrote, this professor to Yehuda, tell me, since I know the Chazon Ish thinks that Israel is going to get destroyed, by the way, do you know when it is? That's essentially the letter. So this person, Yehuda, he probably needs to write a letter back. Let me make perfectly clear from the onset, Chazon Ish never said such an ominous thing, nor was he the kind of person to do so. Based on my intimate closeness to Chazon Ish at the time, I am in a position to deny categorically such a libelous and disastrous rumor. Nor was the great day of Chazon Ish and claims to the contrary by partisan theologians notwithstanding, imbued with any negative or hostile attitude to the state of Israel. He genuinely loved Jews and welcomed, indeed, anything that may save their lives or improve their lot. So how could it be that there's oral tradition circulating within some yeshiva or kollel coteries that Chazon Ish was against the state, proclaimed its doom, it's perpetrated by zealots through a deliberate distortion received by the naive on the basis of an unfortunate misunderstanding. And this phenomenon, that there could be exaggerations, distortions, I haven't had a chance to read so thoroughly. There was a fellow in the community named Daniel Rubin. He gave me a book this week, because he saw the lecture series. You know what it's called? Mechtavim Mezuyafim Neged HaTzionut. Forged letters against the Zionists. And it's an entire book of rabidly, radically anti-Zionist stuff against the cook, against this rub, against that rub, in which he tries to show, through his, so to speak, detective work, how each one's essentially a forgery. So I don't know if every single letter in this is correct, he's right about. Maybe some of them really were written. And he writes at the beginning, he says, I'm not trying to whitewash history. I know there were many people against, but not necessarily this venom and not necessarily all the people that are identified here. So even if he's right about half the book, it's a disturbing phenomenon, but one, unfortunately, that we know existed. So I can't tell you for sure that I know about Yehuda's accurateness with the Chazon Ish. I certainly wasn't close with him. But if it's not inconceivable that what he's saying is true, because it certainly was such a phenomenon. And it's also true that we know, as Tzvi Yehuda acknowledges, we'll see in a moment, that the Chazon Ish was certainly not counted among the leaders of the Mizrachis. He is essentially the father of B'nai Brak, period. It grew around him. He wasn't the first one there, but when he came from Europe, that was, it was a fantastic phenomenon. The Chazon Ish did not have an official position. We associate him sometimes with the Ponovitch. He didn't hold the position of Ponovitch, to the best of my knowledge. He was just the Godel Ador living in B'nai Brak. Everyone from Mikasa Lakasa, so to speak, found him there.
Israeli leaders came to visit.
Right, the famous story when Ben Gurion came to visit him. Yes. Famous story.
Just like they visit Gedolim now.
To less extent, but yes. To less extent, they're both regards.
Which two regards?
Less 12 people. Yeah. Well, I don't think the politicians were all cared as much.
No, I mean, it's through the political.
It's, unfortunately, things have grown farther apart, not closer together. That's the bottom line. So what about the issue? So he says the following. Chazon Ish was neither antagonistic towards the state or opposed to its tailors. He was very positive and hopeful about the presence and prospect of the state and encouraged any way of supporting and upholding it. Nonetheless, he was not yet ready. So soon after the Declaration of Independence, under a fierce war, harsh conditions, and hazardous borders, for this revolutionary move halakhically, instituting a new holiday. Shabbat Yom HaAtzmaut. Ritual changes of liturgy, especially during the Sfirah season, eliminating Tachlin, permitting haircuts and weddings, Hallel, to all of this, he then said no. Why? So he explains. He explains, I didn't give you all of it, but essentially the idea that we were saved miraculously, and then we should thank God for the military victory, could there be a problem of saying Hallel about such a phenomenon, which people have raised? The way he reports that the Chazon Ish disagreed, he thought there was no technical problem whatsoever. But what was the problem? It was something else, more subtle, but more important. That the people who were pushing for the establishment of Yom HaAtzmaut as a religious holiday didn't just see this as a regular day of Thanksgiving, but pregnant with definite messianic meaning, as a day which heralds and constitutes an element of the messianic era, and this, for the Chazon Ish, is the core of the problem. He was very alarmed by undue messianic overtones. What's the two-word phrase he's referring to? The whole war within the Orthodox world is about three words. Rashi's smicha skulosayin, which means the heralding of the flowering, right? It's not even, as I heard what J.J. Shanker say, it's not even the smichas, it's not even the rashi's, it's the rashi's of the smichas of the geula. But that's a very, 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 we'll see that next week's year. Next week's year, we'll discuss the writing of the Tzilu v'Shlomo Medina, Rav Herzog, Shayagno, it's a complicated story. Okay? But we're having too much fun with this side of the argument. If I would be supportive of Zionism tonight, it would be terrible. Okay. So therefore, that is why he is against. And he reiterates this a number of times. And essentially he makes the point, again, it's a very big chiddush, I think, that historical reality of Sitzel Chazon Ish has to be assessed with clarity. And really, from our limited human judgment, do we know is it the beginning of the redemption? Time will tell. This is the gist of the Chazon Ish's response, that by malice or stupidity or both, is now distorted and repeated as if it were a terrible pronouncement of doom. So if you wanted to put, if you will, the Chazon Ish in the category of the Satmar Rebbe, which the people were trying to do, that's what he says, no, there are nuances. There were nuances, that's not at all, he did not go that far. He wrote here, again, something which certainly seems very reasonable to me, frankly. It is impossible to properly evaluate a great historical event while we're still very much a part of it. We need a little vantage of time and the benefit of perspective. We still pray, we still pay with tears and blood, heroic victims and bereft survivors. Unfortunately, has anything changed?
No.
Nothing has changed, right? We're still doing, still have tragic funerals. Chazon Ish pointed out the political, economic, the national situation is not yet closer. He says this conversation after Chazon Ish was in around 1950. The recognition of the state is not yet settled. In short, with all of our joy and hope, we must be somberly aware the present is still full of hazard and complexity. And that was before terrorism. In theory, we must admit, it's quite possible that after a few years, we may, in tragedy and horrible disappointment, lose independence. Things will turn back to the way they were, if not worse. Even while we hope and pray for the best, we must always be apprehensive and ready for the worst. We must never react to historical events euphorically or rashly. So he says this, tells Yehuda, I hammered the Chazon Ish to tell me, when will we know? How long do we have to wait? I would have guessed that the Chazon Ish would have given him an answer. What he says is that the Chazon Ish said, after a decade or two, maybe we'll be able to tell. Then we hope the wars will be over and peace achieved, the borders enlarged and secured, prosperity prevails, and stay recognized by all as an unshakable fact, unquestionable sovereignty. Now we have to wait. Not only did he not predict or proclaim the disruption, he ardently prayed for success and continued growth. He concludes, Chazon Ish did not live to see his dream come true, i.e. the constant growth and progress of the state of Israel during its crucial formative three decades. And this article is written in 1979. I can imagine his exuberant joy. Would he have then changed his mind about Yom HaAtzmaut and Hallel? Probably not. With the increased wisdom of his old age, I surmise he would have still postponed his final decision. He would have still waited for complete peace, security, cessation of bloodshed and danger, which we all still yearn. So, certainly we all know the Chazon Ish was not counted among the leaders of Mizrahi. Certainly, B'nai Brak is not a headquarters for Mizrahi, which he's singling at had by far the strongest impact on. And yet, it's also not at all true that he was, if you will, virulently opposed. Again, if this letter is supposed to be, but just, and there's an oral tradition that confirms the gist of this article as well, that he has certainly a much more moderate approach. It's also pretty evident by inference that he didn't agree with Rav Henkin either about the prohibition of the establishment of the state of Israel. He certainly agreed with Rav Henkin after the fact we should be supportive, but it sounds like he was even more moderate than that. Once we're in B'nai Brak, don't you feel like we're in B'nai Brak? I want to tell you one story about how beautiful B'nai Brak is. This is an incredible story. This is a complete digression, but I think you'll find it's worth it. Plus, you have to forgive me if I then sometimes mention this in a drasha at some point. I'm not taking away my right to use this in a sermon because I share it with you people right now. There's this I believe it's a true story. Not that long ago, a very successful American businessman was willing to walk away from everything. He already had everything, but he was willing to walk away from it, and he was going to move to B'nai Brak and sit and learn until 120. And he, how nice a house can you find in B'nai Brak? Certainly it wasn't where he was coming from. He gave up all of his external, again, he didn't give away his money, it was in the bank, but he gave up all of his external material excesses, one thing, he wanted to keep his Lexus. I'm telling you, this is the story. He wanted to keep his Lexus. I gave up so much, his car, his fancy car. So his wife said, how can you drive around B'nai Brak in a Lexus? They're all on food stamps. How can you do it? They're going to be, you're rubbing it in their face. So the story goes that eventually they came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. It was a great gadol in his own right. He's the son of the, we saw the Stipler, remember we had the letter last week from the Stipler. They related from the same family of Chazon Ish. So apparently they told him the story. He says, I'm worried, you know, I give up a lot. It's a mysterious number for me to come here. Can I keep a little bit? Can I keep just a car? That's a little spoon of that. Gashmi is a little bit. So he said then, tell me, you're worried people will be jealous of you. Tell me something. Do you know Shas? Forgive me, Rav, but that's why I'm here. I want to learn. So you don't know Shas. Do you know any individual seder of the Talmud? One of the six of them? No, that's why I'm here to learn. Tell me. Do you know one mistakhta backwards and forwards? No one here is going to be jealous of you whatsoever. That is an unbelievable story. I hope it's true. You can have 10 like this. If you don't even know one mistakhta, B'nai Brak, they're not going to be jealous of you at all. It's in Yershal Torah. It's an unbelievable story.
Mazda SUV.
Okay, so now that we're in B'nai Brak, you turn over the page, perhaps the other real architect of, if you will, the whole philosophy and ideology, which, as we all know, has suddenly become more popular now than it was 50 years ago, more popular than it was 20 years ago. If you will, the B'nai Brak influence on the world. So perhaps the single biggest architect on certain parts of the issue, for example, the whole issue of Das Torah and others, the single most influential architect was Rav Dessler. Dessler, Europe, and he eventually was a very big star in England, Gateshead, and then they brought him to B'nai Brak, where he spent on and off the end of his life being a mashkiach in the famed Panovich Yeshiva in B'nai Brak. So there was a two or three year period right around the time of the establishment of the State of Israel where he was in England. He had left, he had already touched base with Panovich, then he went back to England, and he hadn't yet returned until the end of his life. And in that period of time, he wrote a number of letters to the students in Panovich. And in the back of the Mitzvah of Elio, in the third volume, where it collects his letters, there are a few, three letters about the status. You can imagine, it's 1948, 1949. His Talmidim want to know, Rebbe, what should we think about everything that's going on? So there are three letters there. I gave you snippets of two of them. One is dated 1948, and the other is dated 1949. Again, this is the Mechtem Elio, the Panovicher, Mashkiach. Again, no one's going to confuse him with the Mizrachist, the Zionist. He's from a different world completely. But look what he says. We look at the world around us, not the Jewish world, the general world. This is an unbelievable letter. Halo Nira Shinoi Nora. The world is changing. Va'a hit rock suit. Kol ha'kokos kulam b'shnei merkazim mitcharim zebazet. All the powers of the world have, so to speak, coalesced into two competing forces.
Soviet Union.
He's talking about the Cold War. That's exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about the Cold War. The world is changing. Va'a hefsharus v'kol tzad mehem v'avid es kolam kulam b'vavachas. And each one can destroy the world. What was that called? Mutual
destruction.
Right? And that was what saved the world. Because no one wanted to do anything because they knew about the retaliatory strike. This is exactly what he's referring to. And yet, in such a period of armament, we're worried not just about the Jewish people, we're worried about the destruction of the whole world in such a situation. It shouldn't happen, God forbid. We just don't know what to do. How are we going to get out of it? He wasn't Machav in the Reagan yet. How's the Cold War going to end? No one could see an end in sight. Each one was building up more powerful. How's it ever going to end? The world is, it's a terrible time now. 1948.
This is before the
Senate. Okay. Well, apparently they had something that he's referring to.
No, the threat was just, there were people that were starting to recognize the threat.
Okay, well, he was ahead of the curve then, okay?
He knew.
He knew. And at the same time, there's a tremendous anti-Semitism that's rising in the world, the whole world. And yet, with everything that's terrible, the threat of nuclear holocaust and anti-Semitism rising, and yet, at that time, in this terrible time, we're drowning, right, in a sea of hate. He told Kolze, Dafka, no one had. The opposite was born. Shehem ba'atma, the non-Jews themselves, yomru levateis es Yisrael ba'admas hakodesh. They wanted to plant and serve the foundation, Jewish people in the Holy Land. Im kach u'mahalach olam, is this the way things are usually going to work? Right in the middle of things getting so bad, we have this great, great victory, it's an unbelievable thing. Im zehu derech hateva, Could you imagine that the establishment of the State of Israel is just natural causes? In light of that, oh, Kama Nisa Marino, it's not just the establishment of the state. How many further miracles have we seen? After all, Haisa Eretz Yisrael Kamo, Tzfas Achuza, which is a very flowery term, but essentially what I think he means is, it's like caught in a vice. Like in a vice, like tongs. We're being caught on both sides. And here he makes reference to historical reality, which I think I figured out more or less, but I'm not sure entirely. What was this? He refers to the Tzfas Oso HaRosha. I think he's referring to Hitler now. The Sviato, Yamach Shemam Zachrom. What happened, right? We know that the Middle East was on Hitler's war map. Pitom, Berega, Achron, Shaskirat, etc. As they're about to close the clamp on Eretz Yisrael, Hinei Nebach, HaGalgal, Meishneyat, Sadim, everything changed, Mamish. And what happened? So I don't know what that first place is.
Sure, El Alamein.
No, the second one I know. El Alamein was a famous victory.
Ramallah.
Right? It's the same as, I don't know what.
El Alamein was
it. I know it. I was at that. El Alamein, I know. Who knows what the one before that is? The Cocos?
Caucasus, yeah.
What's that referring to?
That an area in mountains in Eastern Europe.
Good. Okay, good, thank you.
Stalingrad.
Okay, good. Everyone know more or less what happened? Okay.
Hitler was defeated in Stalingrad.
Okay. Good. I think this is the 49. Again, he's reflecting on something that happened in the past. Yes, in fact, how miraculous it is. Yes, I think so.
I think that's what he's talking about.
But here again, he's saying, again, the vice is closing on Israel, and then they have stunning losses. They have stunning losses in both directions. He repeats again. Im gam zem mikre. Could this just be happenstance? Could that just have happened? Him magefet hadever mikre. Were the plagues in Egypt also happenstance and coincidence? Or as you're looking at reality, you're seeing things that are just beyond any belief. You have to admit when you see Yad Hashem. One second. All of these are testifying that Hashem is leading us with miracles. The real test is on us. Will we see the hand of God in what's happening? He says it's absolutely clear. Look at the left-hand side. It's from a subsequent letter in 1949. Masha'anu bo achshav, the Eretz HaKadosha. The fact that we are now in the Holy Land. Koshe l'hadiro ke'et aschalta de'gula. Those who want to say the Zionists, the Messianic Zionists, that this is the beginning of the final redemption, that far of Bessler is not willing to go. So it's hard to go that far. Aval al-kalpani, nevertheless. Chasodim gedolim min ha'kotza l'kotzahein. But unbelievable chesed Hashem did for us, for taking us from one extreme to the next. Mikata ha'yisurin shel churban, sheshes alfei alofei me'achenu. We went from the churban of 6 million, el kate Hashem, hityashvut imanu, amenu, excuse me, thank you, b'medina senu, b'eretz hakadosha. It's not just that we're next strong, we survive. It's more than that. The miracle is that we have a Jewish state in the land of Israel. Mizeh tzarech lomod, we need to learn from this, and it should reinforce our faith in Hashem. Oy lemi shiyavo liyom hadin v'adayin sumahu me'liros davar mukshi kazeh. Woe is to one who is so blind to the hand of Hashem that he'll come to the day of judgment and he did not recognize and see such an obvious, such a real, visceral thing that was existing in the world. Now, if I had told you that Rav Kook wrote this, you would have said, okay, it certainly could have been. This is incredibly powerful stuff. And again, the context is important. Yeah, you cannot overestimate, over-exaggerate the influence of Rav Dessler. He was a seminal figure in the formation of, as I say, not only the city of Bnei Brak, but a world. I once heard Rav Cooperman from Michlala, he referred, he said, Bnei Brak is not a place. It's a way of life. And it's true, and it's a very, very holy, wonderful way of life, very dedicated to Torah, there's no question about it. It wasn't always like that. It's not that old of even of the city. But one of the prime movers, again, you can't imagine, and on certain issues, on certain other issues, the infallibility of Chazal and other things, Das Torah, Rav Dessler, his mamashi is the, if you will, he's not just a party member, he is the leader, the architect of what you would call a Haredi position. So his bona fides in which camp he's in are without question. And yet, it's Dafka him, saying it's just, it's, you can't look at this and say this is Derech HaTavah. Now, we all know that there are millions of Jews to this very day. We do. So, if you know, let me show them this letter from Rav Dessler. And what else can I tell you? So again, we're still not, we won't, even by the end of tonight, we won't get there. We're still not in the Mizrahi camp. But we started from the Satmar Rebbe, and obviously the Satmar Rebbe could never have said such a thing. For the Satmar Rebbe, as we mentioned last week, all of these things were of the Maisa Sutton. It was demonic. Now, why did the Satmar Rebbe have to say it was demonic? Because in some way he agreed with Rav Dessler's assessment. You could look at this and give a natural explanation. Because even the Satmar Rebbe would have preferred to blame this on the UN or some other natural occurrence. But because it was so amazing, he needed to give an amazing explanation. So he said it's demonic forces. But as we've seen, as great as the Satmar Rebbe was, it was not a mainstream view. But here we have somebody to say, a mainstream leader, if you will, of a Gura, Haredi, whatever word you want to use. And the shades are getting a little bit closer. Let's do a little bit more. This is close to home. Rabbi Lazar Silber was from Cincinnati. He came from Europe, and he was the chief rabbi of America. And as the famous story goes, he reminded people, and Canada, which is befitting of his personality, was a very flamboyant individual, but a great, great Talmud Chacham, a super-duper genius, who was the head of the Igud HaRabbanim, and then the Agudas Israel, very quickly of Aaron Cutler. He was one of the people who went back to Europe to rescue the children after the war and the TB camps. Famous stories about him, unquestionably wonderful person. And a number of years ago, 1981, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet wrote an incredible book, which I recommend to anybody, called The Silver Era. That's just a biography of him. It's about his whole time period. And one of the things he mentions is how complicated Rabbi Elazar Silber was in terms of pinning down an Eretz Yisrael, because as much as he was part of what was then the Igud, and then the Agudah, as he says here, there's abundant evidence that in fact apparently he got in trouble with some more radical factions in the Agudah. He was ardently pro-Israel. So just to give you a little bit of the historical evidence, again, this is someone who was universally respected. He was involved also subsequently. I know that, I said that, but he was involved in both. He was involved in both. He was involved in the Agudah of Israel with Rav Aaron Cutler. He was involved in both. Again, if I remember correctly from this book, it was very clear. So he says here another time that Rabbi Silber was in a quandary with how he very publicly supported Israel Bonds, and how once Israel Bonds honored somebody from HUC, a Reform Jew, and many Orthodox Jews felt he shouldn't go, and he went, even though it was honoring a prominent Reform personality. As he says there, how could I stay away from a dinner aiding the state of Israel? Or subsequently, if you look on the right-hand side, I give you another example, another story. He was always in favor of such a state, despite his ties to Agudat Israel. Following the Balfour Declaration in 1917, Silber marched in New York, and the Zionists prayed his support. When Rav Kook came in 1924, Agudas HaRabbanim invited him to address the congregation, the convention. When he was speaking, there were catcalls in the middle of the address. A rabbi from the Midwest, not naming names, though, attempted to interfere with the guest, and Silber immediately silenced the interrupter, demanding that the respect be shown to the distinguished visitor. There's a number of pictures. I just cut out one of them for you. This is a sound-like show. I have a picture. This is Rav Elazar Silber giving a shiur in Merkaz HaRav. That was the yeshiva started by Rav Kook. To the right, on the left, standing at the pulpit, at the podium, you have Rav Elazar Silber. The one closest to him with the big white beard was Rav Kook's son-in-law, who had subsequently taken over as Rosh Yeshiva. And again, if you want a symbol of religious Zionism, that's the yeshiva. And obviously, Rav Elazar Silber had no problem going there and being supported. Oh, good. I was in that shul, but I don't remember that picture. Maybe that got taken out after he died. Before it was in Roselawn, you mean. Which doesn't exist anymore either. A church. Okay. We're running out of time. I apologize. I wanted to share with you three more things. The last page. We're up to the last page. It's alright?
It's alright.
Go more? Come on. Yeah, too nice. They're not going to call you to complain.
So they won't
comment. Okay. Doesn't call Susan. Okay. That's never happened before. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, I hope, needs no introduction to any of you. One of the great, great post-war Gedolim in America. Again, one of the original, lifelong members of the Agudat Israel in America on their Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah. Again, bona fides, absolutely 100%. And at the same time, it was true. It still is true with some of his family members, as you know. A little bit broader than some others in his camp, a little bit more open and close with other people in other parts of the community. But again, his open-mindedness and some of his relationships or respect should not be confused with who he was. He was a if you will, a card-carrying member of the Aguna. And certainly one would not expect, or wouldn't, I don't think, be it fair to call him a religious Zionist. I don't think that would have been true. And yet, there is at least one thing that we have in his name. I don't know if he published too much, if anything, in his lifetime, but he does have a grandson-in-law named Rabbi Daniel Neustadt from Cleveland, who has, with, on behalf of the entire family in the last few years, been publishing much of Rabbi Yaakov's Torah. They have volumes in all three areas you might have expected. They have volumes on Talmudic tractates, on the Septos. There's a volume on Shulchan Aruch, Psak Halacha. And there is also, a probably the most well-known, it was a tremendous commentary on Chumash. All of the volumes are known as MS Liakov, Fruit Jacob, and this is from the MS Liakov on Chumash. So if you look in a footnote there, in his commentary, Sefer Shmos, this Rabbi Neustadt, again, it's not from the words of Rabbi Yaakov, but since this book hasn't yet been banned, I assume that even if some people are unhappy with it, the family at least, stands by this quote. Oh, they don't know about it yet, Rabbi Orstein? Okay.
They didn't read the whole book yet.
It's in the footnotes.
They don't read the footnotes.
The good stuff is always in the footnotes. Od Hosef Rabbeinu Bekama Hezam Liot. There were many times that Rabbi Yaakov used to say, Shekach Aleinu Lehovin Eskam HaKamas Medinas Yisrael B'Yameinu. What should be our approach to establishing the state of Israel? Shalachar HaKurban HaGadol, after the great Holocaust, V'Hayeyosh, Shneachaz Bekarev Sheheres HaPleita, the great depression that overtook those who remained, those survivors. V'chein L'Or Masavam HaNaosh HaAvud, Shal Yehadut Rusia, throws in the Russian Jews, the great plight that's going on there. Sibe V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Es HaKamas HaMedina, El Chazek, Es HaZahut HaYehudit, L'Kayim Es HaKesher, Shpein Yehadut HaGola, V'Chal Yisrael. Says, again, it could be controversial from a different perspective as well, that the state of Israel was established as a reaction to the terrible calamity of the Holocaust, and as he adds in, even the plight of Soviet Jewry. That at this period in the Jewish history, we needed, for the sake of our own, he doesn't talk about our material security, which is also true, we'll see that a little bit from our Soloveitchik next week. How, unfortunately, it's not always true, especially nowadays, but the thought being that Jews would be safer, they would have their own state and their own army. But he doesn't focus on that, but he's talking just psychologically or emotionally, the Jewish people needed a homeland. Many ways, not only to raise our spirits and our pride, but also to unify Jews from all over the world. Now this, especially even the part about the Holocaust, is a little bit reminiscent of last week we ended with Aaron Soloveitchik. Aaron Soloveitchik said the same thing. Now again, I'm not equating the two of them exactly. Aaron Soloveitchik was much more of an identifiable religious Zionist, and I don't think Rabbi Yaakov was. But again, just as for the point of departure or contrast, think about where we started tonight with the Satmar Rebbe. Even think about, to a certain extent, what we saw about with Rav Henkin. For him, not only was the state of Israel not satanic, not only was it not prohibited, it was from Yad Hashem. Hashem ordained that there be a state of Israel because we need it. Now, does that have anything to do with the Gula and Rachel Smichas Gula Seinu and Esalat of the Gula? It has nothing to do with that. But it was still a good thing. And by extension, we would assume that he thinks it should be supported and maintained. A little bit of a lesser-known personality, I think, to most, other than one person in the room. There was a great Talmud Chacham and a Posek from Muncie named Rav Weinfeld. Rav Avram Weinfeld, who actually has a son, who had a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, who was a Rebbe of at least one of our members. He named yeshiva the same name, called Lev Avram. So he was a great Posek, and he lived in Muncie, and he published a tshuva in a journal called Hamaor. He then got lots of angry mail. So there was two more tshuvas, and he collected these from the journal and put them into his shalos. The tshuva is called, as I say, Lev Avram. So there's three tshuvas. The first one is Simon Kuf Kuf Pes, chapter 129. And he writes about it. He goes, let's see what's going on in the world. How do we understand what should be the appropriate, again, this was known as a event from the Haredi world, what should be the approach to Eretz Israel?
What time frame is this?
I think the late 50s. I believe. He writes here, Ube Emes, after summarizing all the scholarship, basically what we did last week, Kol Eilu HaRayos HaChokos Shemeviyim Yimikraya Kodesh, all the sources you'll bring from Tanakh or from Gemara, Eilu Ba'ad, those who are pro the state, Eilu Keneged, those who are against the state, says have kol yish lichos. You could get out of all of them. The list or the ein mehav acharav rura. It says at the end of the day, there's no compelling or convincing argument one way or the other. Until we have Eliyahu Hanavi, you should come. Tishvi Yatari says we're never going to know for sure. What should we do? Al yachkor achar hatidos. Don't try to figure it out. Hele yispal Hashem yisbarach. We have to hope that everything works out for the best. But what she does not mean to destroy the state of Israel. You understand? It means we should hope the state of Israel works out, and it should bring the Geula.
How do you get that? I mean, it's rather immoral.
Continue. There's those of that we should know. He has no says, you know, you have a whole, in Baltimore you have an lecture series, and everyone spends all this time arguing over, yes, Hallel, no Hallel, yes, Zionist, no Zionist. Says Rav Weinberg, you know, it's not that important in the scheme of things. It's not one of the Yogim Likarim. If you're not sure, you don't have a clear approach to the state of Israel, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. What do we have to do? Lishmar Mishmeres Hashem, Lukaim is Kamitzvus. You still got to be a Torah Jew. Don't get so caught up, and again, in this sense, a little bit reminiscent of the Chazon Ish. It's impossible to know, it's too confusing. That shouldn't paralyze you. So he has more and more paragraphs, and then you look on the left-hand side, he summarizes it. Hayotze meitzeh, what emerges? Shalpiyah Torah, Hagavar omid v'safik. He says, I just don't know. Intellectual humility is also a milah. He says, I just don't know. L'chein, sheiv al tasa adif. Ein makom l'smoach l'kvoa yomtif, hal v'odo, v'yom ha'atmut shalahem. We should make yom ha'atmut into a big religious holiday. K'mokein, ein makor l'izor tainis. We shouldn't have it as a fast day. We want it, meaning the state of Israel, it should work out. But Bechlal, he says, by the way, P.S. This is where you see some of his sympathies. What would be so bad? What would be so bad if there are those who believe that the state of Israel was Hashem, again, like Rav Yaakov Kapanevsky? What would be so bad if you were Rav Yaakov? What would be so bad if you believed that the establishment of Israel was Hashem having mercy on his people? After all, Achar Tzoros, Rabos, Aros, Shekaru Lanu, Shon Ma'achronos, all these terrible things that happened to us in recent years. Nos Lehem, Nes, they had this great miracle, Bogavar Lehem, Ocharzo, Chutzl Derech HaTeva. Says everything that happened, it was chutzl derech hateva. The people should believe that that came from Hashem. It's not so bad. He's not an ardent anti. He's not convinced that the scholars of the Gula, he's not convinced that the Mizrahi is 100% right. But it wouldn't bother him if they were. It's not it wouldn't shake his worldview. Again, he's not coming out. I don't think he ever signed up for Mizrahi. I don't think. But certainly a far, far more moderate.
Well, he's speaking in the third person, it's clearly not his view.
No, on the contrary.
No, this is view.
This is how people write. Yes, he's saying no. The they meaning what people are religious Zionists. The they think that we should have a whole Yontif out of it. He says that he's not sure. He's not willing to go that far. But let's say they're right. Okay, he's okay with that. I want to conclude with the most amazing story, the most amazing source. The Telzer dynasty, again, one of the most famous yeshivas, first in Lita in Europe, and then reestablishing itself in Cleveland, now with branches in Chicago and in Riverdale, New York. Most famous, famous yeshivas. So one of the leading yeshivas, I'm not sure if it was second or third generation there, the one who came over was the leader, right when they came over after the war in Cleveland, was Rav Elia Meir Bloch.
First generation.
He was the first generation of Telzer in Europe.
No.
His first generation in Cleveland, correct. First generation in Cleveland. So let me give you the background of the source we're about to read. On Sunday, May 9th, 1954, the Orthodox Jewish Association of Cleveland held a Yom Ha'atzmaut celebration. It was the sixth anniversary of the Medina, and they held it, for those who know Cleveland, at the Taylor Road Synagogue. What happened there? There was a hospitality committee. You know who the hospitality committee was? They invited the whole Jewish community. Mrs. Saul Bloomfield, who represented Mizrahi women, and a Mrs. Mordechai Gifter, representing the Shea Aguda. That's her Gifter, Zatzal's wife, participating. She was there with the hospitality committee for this Yom Ha'atzmaut celebration. We have a copy, I have a Xerox of it. We have a copy of the program. There was what they call the presenting of colors. Who did the presenting of colors? two teenagers, one a representative of Bnei Akiva, the other a Pirkei Aguda. What was this celebration? It wasn't just singing and dancing or something like that. It was a panel presentation entitled Looking Ahead with Religious Zionism. There was a speaker from Mizrahi, and there was also a speaker from Aguda, Elia Meir Bloch, the Telza Rosh Hashiva. Now this, if you know anything about the world, unless you've been in a cave the last 50 years, this is a breathtaking event. It shouldn't shock you that a week later, he had gotten criticized terribly for his participation in such an event. And he had a letter that he wrote, a 3-page letter, staking out his position, and he didn't back down an inch, defending his participation and the Telzer and the Aguda participation in this Yom Ha'atzmut celebration with Mizrahi and Bnei Akiva. It's 1 week later, May 16th, is the date of the letter, 1954. So what does he say in this letter? He says a lot of things. I'll give you a little bit of the summary. It's published in a book called Mitzvot HaShalom, and the author is a fellow named Rav Epstein. He writes on the bottom that this is a quintessential example of how two groups who don't agree should get along. The book itself was published a few years later in 1969. This is the last entry from this huge 600-plus page book. He says here, he's writing to the people who were there, Reishis Avielo Toda Alpniyaso Eli Levakech Purim Inyan Chag Asmut Viladun Levake Mirachol. As you know, and I can tell you as someone who has been in his position before, I know exactly where he's coming from. Thank you, he says to the person who was wrote him this letter criticizing him. You had the Meshlechkeit. You had the integrity, you came to me directly, you spoke to my face, not behind my back, not from a distance. You were a mensch to me, you disagreed with me, and you gave me an opportunity to respond. Thank you for that. Number two. Faith. Tara Mago El Diun Hadafer. Before we get to the answers, let's first know what the questions are. Number one. If Yom Ha'atzmaut Yeshul Erech, Shroi L'Hisponein Bo L'Hadiyah Shkaf Hayadus HaKharidis Allah. Again, this is a Haredi, if you will, a Goodist. What should our approach be? Does Yom Ha'atzmaut have a religious significance to people from our background? Two, Emroi Hu, Chagiyus, Habash, Shiviyas, Rason. What's that? Should we be celebrating such a holiday? Three, Emroi Lechevre, Agudas Yisrael, Lavo Bekesher, Mchevre, HaMizrahi. Should the Aguda come together with the Mizrahi in such a banner? This is the answer to your questions. Number one. Asma'ut Yisrael v'hakamat ha-medina ha'izem ma'ora choshuv v'chayayamin. The establishment of the state of Israel is a significant thing in the life of our nation. U'kidai chevri ha-goris Yisrael yishtamshu v'shiyeti asharut v'havia daitam ha-shkabasam v'fnei ha-sipa s'rabasi im l'man yishpia aleya meruach ha-goda. He says, especially since they gave me an opportunity to speak and I could present to the masses, even people who are not agudists who are going to come to this, obviously. They have an opportunity to hear me, I can express my view on this. And he says in number two, despite all the problems and the mistakes that the state of Israel, the government makes, etzem kiyuma, shenishava aydei nisim galuyim, the establishment of the state of Israel, which without a doubt came from manifest miracles, yesh lo chashivus, shetzrichim anachnu hisyaches lo, v'hakara, v'yas rotzo. We need to be aware and appreciative of this great miracle that is the state of Israel. We need to make sure that we express, people know our attitude for this, for two reasons. Number one, this is the first most important thing. If it's true, we have to have the courage to admit it and to tell people this. This is really fascinating. Listen, he says, I'm an Agudist. We have a lot of timers, a lot of criticism against the state of Israel, against its government. People shouldn't think that we are throwing out the baby with the bathwater. They shouldn't think that because we're so against the government, secular, that we are against the state of Israel, per se. Number three, perhaps the most important mussar of the whole lecture series, certainly of this particular source. Hishtatzfut ima mezrachi, open, shahagudist Israel, chavshit, hotzi lefoal, es hashkaposteinu. If we're going to join with the Mizrahi, and again, in all fairness, you have to give us a chance that we should express who we are. You can't ask us to compromise what we believe, but if you give us a chance to be honest about what we believe, in such a case, Ha'idei HaKamos, HaChazis HaDosis, Sh'agudas Yisrael Nechona, Tamid Hadasha. All of this, he says, to be able to be participating in such a thing, absolutely worthwhile for us. Amnam, Yadati. Ki mechulakim anachtim mizrachi v'ikri emuna. Listen, I'm not a Mizrachiist. We have profound differences of opinion with them. Uvashum open ein deosteinu mechuvonos. We don't exactly see the eye to eye in everything. And it's not just our thoughts that leads to practical differences. Nevertheless, afalpikein, yeshtam in yonim rabin, bottom of the right-hand column, sheyicholim anachnu la'asosam biyachad. There are so many things we can join together to do. L'chazak aydeizeh, eskoka shalhayadus ha-charedis. And here, charedis means orthodoxy. We can get all together, Mizrahi, a good, we can do things for the sake of Orthodox Judaism. This will have a tremendous influence and impact on the life of the people. He says, and all of this, he says, it would have been a good thing to be a part of. He speaks about this association of Orthodoxy, how they were the ones who do kashrus in Cleveland. He says, it would be good to help them, even if, by doing it, I was being a part of something, like Yom HaTzmut, where I disagreed with what they were doing. But he says, Papa Lachim Kalim. But all the more so, because Shekane, Shedaiti he, Shekamas HaMedinas Yisrael he, Be'emes, Ma'ora Chashuv, Bechei Amenu, Yechoseinu, Huzeh, Chiyuvit he. Because I would even have been willing to participate in such a thing, because I think this organization and the principle of Orthodox Jews getting together, even if I thought this individual was a bad thing. But all the more so, since I think it's not only important, but chiyuvit, it's a positive phenomenon in reality. And therefore, he says, I want to explain to you why this is, it's been 6 years, right? How come they weren't together the first 5 years? Like, we're still positive. Now we want to know where they've been the last 5 years. So he says, listen, I'll tell you, it's not because of us. Lo mitzidenu, el mitzad, other things, other factors. Now, hashta, panu elenu, now they're coming to us and they want to invite us. They're willing to accept us, meaning the Zionists were antagonistic. Let's be honest, right? It's not just anti-Zionists, they're sometimes antagonistic in the other direction, right? The Zionists, we started off with that story last week, right, where this fellow was very adamant, how come Rav Zev Gold was saying, or Ruderman, that wasn't right? Right, so there's intolerance on both sides. So he says, but now that they're open to us and they want to have us here, we're happy to be here. And listen, I don't know what he's referring to in Cleveland 1954, if anyone can tell me, but he says here, Lamrosh, Bashan, Azuz, Dafka, this year, Anakta, Omdin, Bekishre, Milchama, Mizrahi, Yosem, Rebashan, Shavru. We're having more differences of opinion with Mizrahi. Nevertheless, Masonu, Lenachon, Laharos, Lahem, Kibitvaram, Shukula, Sehem, Maskimos, Ladasenu, where we have common ground, we're willing to walk with them hand in hand, arm in arm. Last paragraph, which is so important. I already told you my hashkafa. Ki harbe avadnu aydezeh. We have lost so much because we have refused lahakir b'dvarim d'chonim, where we have been unwilling. He's talking about the Yehuda, his crowd, been willing to admit the milas of the other side. Why? Because Shahachim, Masham Shehem, Hamizrachim, means the secular Zionists, the religious Zionists, because they are supporting something, so too often we react by just being against it. Because if we think that if we support that thing, we're supporting them. But Zaati, Lo Mosu Hashkapasenu, Hod, Libos Hakal. Thank you.
Equal.
Thank you. Libos Hakal Rafa. He says, it's not working. It's not working. We're limiting our influence. It's not because of this. Because of this, what have we backed away from? Our negative approach, negative varm hanachonim, kamo, limurat hanach, lashon kodesh, Eretz Yisrael, right? If the Mizrahi focuses on Tanakh, so we're not for Tanakh. Mizrahi wants to speak Hebrew, we don't speak Hebrew. Mizrahi supports Israel, we don't support Israel. This is all a terrible, terrible mistake. Hakal enu yochol lahavin. They don't understand the masses, the nuances, the differences with what we're opposed, what we're for. But Adarabu, on the contrary, when we focus and emphasize what we actually support, the chiyuvit, the hakartu, shel emes, if we can just focus on that which we think is true and agree with the Mizrahi on, or even the non-religious, that's the case, will actually strengthen our own position. Gam mazos alai lahavia, last column, last paragraph. This idea of being supportive of that which we agree with and participating when we can, don't think it's Rabbi Meir, it's my chiddush, it's a new thing. Rather, the takas ruach gai America, it's just an American phenomenon. This is also what happened in Lithuania and Europe. Just like now then, Kanoim Gemurim. The word Kanoim Gemurim, radicals, sincere but radicals. You know, Gei Alamashu Chas Hashem Shvul Piruach HaTorah. There were people who criticized us then, just like there are people who are going to criticize us now. Nevertheless, we didn't run away from it now. We're not going to run away from it. We didn't run away from it then. We're not going to run away from it now. And because of this, unfortunately, Gam Sabul Tsa'ar Nezek Rav Lanu Yeshiva Gadosh. We have to be honest with what we believe. We have to have the courage of those convictions. And we will support anything we can. Now, I think, so I want to give a chance to conclude this, but say goodbye for a moment, please. He can't be clearer than him that he's not a Mizrachiism. We disagree about lots of things. It's not our Ashkafa. And yet, not only is he willing to talk about how positive the state of Israel was, Nisim Gluyim, not Derech HaTeva, that was a good thing, it's an important thing, it's wonderful from Hashem. He's even willing to, you know, it's one thing to speak in the Luft, in philosophy. It's another thing to be part of the Yom HaUtzot celebration at Taylor Road Synagogue. You can only imagine what the Kanaim were saying then. No one would confuse that with what we will study next week. But it's an important thing to realize that even within what we, again, not just us, it's the press, it's everybody, but we should be colorblind. We should know there are many shades of black. But maybe people in this room who sympathize, or more than that, with some of those perspectives. Certainly legitimate. But we should realize that it's not monolithic. Not only is it not all the Satmar Rebbe, even to the people on the left of the Satmar Rebbe, we've seen quite a few different shades. Some more sympathetic, some less sympathetic, some more be willing to evolve, less involved. One thing I'll leave you with, which is I think would be a fair point. It's not clear to me that, to take the last example, that the Pelzer Rosh Hashivas of today still espouse the belief of the... So I'm not sure what to tell you. I wouldn't be sure what to say to them. But it's in writing. It happened. And this is more than just happening. This is a very, very strong statement. Listen, we all know the world is a fluid place, for better and for worse. I'm not here to comment on current events. I'm here to give you a historical and a Torah survey analysis of things that did happen. But we see there are nuances, there are shades. And as much as we sometimes, and I think lazily or for lack of knowledge, group things or group our people together, we have to realize that these were serious, it goes without saying, serious, substantive, holy, tzaddikim, brilliant, really, and they thought about things, they had legitimate opinions, and they didn't always agree with each other, let alone, if you will, people will be so much on the other side. There's a lot of nuance here, which I think is very important for us to appreciate. Merit Hashem, next week, will conclude the survey by looking at those who are not on this side of the aisle, so to speak, but on the other side, but we will also see, I think, again, too often others and even ourselves sometimes think that everyone who is, so to speak, a Zionist, a religious Zionist, a Zrachi, Mafal, Hezder, Rav Kook, it's all the same thing, it's a Cholim. The answers are very, very different approaches, and I think we may be surprised at how much commonality there are with some of the approaches in the Mizrahi, if you will, certainly some of the things that we saw here, especially from Rav Block. It's not clear to me how different Salvation was from this. We'll see that there's a very, very wide views of opinion, disagreements even within the religious Zionist world. And I hope that through all of this, not only we become more educated in the actual Torah sources, but certainly, I think, hopefully, don't get a greater appreciation of everything. But I would hope, and I know this is an overused word and it could be cliche, but it does have a place, and I think this is one of them, hopefully more tolerance. More tolerance. I'm not talking about all this, just within the Torah world, at least. I'm not asking for Mashiach. Just as there should be tolerance within the Orthodox world. And I think the only way to do that, not just to stay within our own bunker, but is to look outward and to learn other perspectives, other viewpoints, and realize that we have much in common with them, even where we disagree on some important things. But hopefully through understanding the variations and the nuances and the shade, we'll come to greater appreciation. I'm happy to stay along and talk and answer any questions, but for all of our sakes, I think we should adjourn to the other room where I know Michelle is prepared. It's characteristically something with strength.